What is up, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of the Cinema Wave Podcast. We're doing something very exciting and new for you guys. We have four cameras operating. We have not done this since we did our Emmy show, and one of them was a cell phone, but now we have all four cameras rolling for our season two finale review and discussion of House of the Dragon on HBO. I am one of your hosts. My name is Darian Scalamoni. I am joined by Liz Seiko.
Hello, everybody.
Mark Iacobino.
How's it going?
And Vinny Albano.
Hello, hello.
Let's get into it. Woo. So the internet is pissed. The internet is pissed, and maybe rightfully so. This is a show that we've been waiting for 2 years to get the follow-up to what was like a really, really great end of season one. And there was a lot of action that happened, and there was a major turning point at the end of that season. Leading us into season two, it was almost 2 years later that we get season two, and we had talked about it in a lot of our reviews throughout the season that there was a lot of setup and we were waiting for something really exciting to happen, and it doesn't seem that we got that. So just broad thoughts overall for everybody. We'll start with you, Liz. What do you think of the finale overall?
I mean, I was disappointed probably like everybody else in this room and like the internet. I just feel like this entire season was set up, and a little spark of me was hoping that the finale would actually give us a little bit of something like the first season did, and it didn't. It didn't give me anything. I would like this episode if it was an actual episode and not the finale, but when it comes to finale-based, it was trash.
Mark?
Yeah, I didn't like this episode very much. I think it's probably my least favorite episode of the season, or at least tied for my least favorite. I talked to Liz off camera. Mm-hmm. This as an episode 8 in a 10-episode season is fine. But this as a finale to a season that we had been waiting 2 years for, and especially when season one was 10 episodes, right? And then they shortened this season to go to 8, and they said there would be a good reason for it. And now that we've seen it, there was not a good reason for it. It feels like they're just stretching it out to, you know, make season three a bigger event when it finally does come out. So yeah, this was very disappointing for me.
Vinny?
Yeah, I echo the same words. I think that this season was a lot of setup, and I was very optimistic all throughout this season. I was like, okay, I love where they're going with this. I love where they're going. But with a season finale, you need to have some sort of satisfying resolution. And this season has had great moments, but with this finale, it's even more setup with no resolution. And that's fine going into season three. It makes me excited for season three, but just as a complete package for the last 8 weeks, just things are not satisfied.
So I agree with what all you guys are saying. Here's my follow-up question for all of it, right? Would we have rather seen this season end with the way that episode 7 ends, where we have these established dragon riders now that she's been seeking out? Or if not, what is something that you guys would have liked to see in a potential finale that would have made it better for you? Obviously, I know that the general answer is action, but was there something with a character or a specific thing you were looking forward to that you would have liked to see wrap up the season?
I think maybe like one of the initial battles that they've at least set up with this montage ending that they had. I feel if we saw one of those battles at least start or end, I think that would have been a bit more satisfying, because, you know, we were promised the Dance of the Dragons and we really only got it in episode 4, which was fantastic. Mm-hmm. But the ending is just blue balls. It's just like, look at this. Look at this battle. Look at this battle. Yeah. You don't get to see any of it.
So, yeah.
Just one of them.
I think that's fair.
I think for me, it's the fact that they ended on something that we just didn't want to see ever, right? Like, they ended, the last scene is the scene between Rhaenyra and Alicent, which I get what they're trying to do. They, same thing with episode 3, they're doing this parallel between the conversations, but Alicent's character is kind of ruined now. She has no agency, and she's just kind of all over the place, and doesn't even like really, I know Mark, you were talking about it off camera, doesn't really truly own up to her doings. So it's a matter of like that they ended on just like that was like just a terrible last scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I totally get it. Before we get into the nitty gritty of specific scenes, I did want to bring this up because I know we've talked about season three, season four, and also the episode lengths. So this is from the showrunner and co-creator Ryan Condal talking about it when they asked specifically. So the show was going to go into production in early-ish 2025, and the other spinoff is coming in 2025. So we can probably anticipate this in 2026. So they're going to, I think, stretch it a little bit more even to try to get one Thrones per year, essentially. Mm-hmm. And it said, asked whether it would return to 10 episodes again. Condal said he wasn't sure yet, but did suggest the new shorter format would be the way forward. The quote is, I haven't had discussions with HBO about it. I would just anticipate that the cadence of the show from a dramatic storytelling perspective will continue to be the same from season two on. So it's not conclusive, but we know HBO likes to do those roundabout, again, whether it's 6 episodes, 8 episodes, 10 episodes, like, so I think they might be sticking to 8. And Mark, and we'll jump to you because I know you said this. I think it's because they're just trying to stretch the story out so they can get 4 seasons rather than 3.
Is there like a secret meeting between Hollywood executives at Disney and HBO that says 8 episodes is like the length of TV seasons now for live action? Mm. Like, Disney's doing this with Star Wars and Marvel, and it hasn't worked there. And now HBO, which is supposed to be the pinnacle of scripted television, is now going down the same route. And it's like, I don't want HBO to become a content streaming service like everything else has become. I want them to still be those standouts of, no, we're still here for the artistic vision, not for, you know, money and consumption of our content.
I'm worried about it because it's like, you had so much built in that first season with 10 episodes. And we'll get to scores, obviously, at the end. But I personally thought season one was way stronger than this season. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about this, too. There were SAG delays. There were writer strike delays. There were a lot of things happening. Excuse me. But at the same time, why would you continue? Like, wouldn't you want to get back to normalcy then at that point? Like, I can understand maybe doing it for this season because there were so many things happening. But I don't know. Liz, how do you feel about the episode count?
Episode counts don't really bother me that much. Just like with a show like this, being 8 or 10, I'm really not bothered by it. I'm more bothered by his comment of like saying, oh, we want to keep it shorter so that the episodes are more dramatic. I'm sorry. Even now, none of these are dramatic. So like, I don't know what they're doing. Mm. And I do agree. I think that they probably, when they, storyboarded this initial show, even before they filmed season one, they probably were able to get a solid 3 seasons, and some big wig at HBO was like, nope, we need a 4th season, people. We got to be making that money, so you need to extend, you need to cut, you need to fix season two to end at a certain spot that is able to produce 2 more seasons after it, which is why I think this season was so bad, because they didn't want to end at a point where it catapults the story to a place that they only are able to have 1 more season. So they cut it short to be able to extend it.
Yeah. Well, let's start with the way this episode opens. Talk about something not dramatic. And we put us in a very interesting position because we open up on the season two finale with Tywin Lannister seeking a sea fleet to battle Team Black, which is interesting because we haven't even seen the sea fleet all season for Team Black anyway, but we know it is something that's been looming. We've discussed this, Vinny, on previous episodes. And he has this interaction with a woman who runs the sea fleet, and she says, you got to battle me for if you want to be a part of this. And there's all these different qualms that they have in the territory that they're at. I forget if it's Essos or Pesos, but Pentos. See, I'm already Pesos, literally so bad. So forgettable. But it's a weird opening, especially for a finale where it's like we're waiting for so many answers to so many questions coming off the last 3 or 4 episodes. So I guess, Vinny, we'll start with you. Hmm. What did you think in terms of that opening? And do you think it's something that's going to be substantial going forward? Because I'm not sure it's even going to be a big piece to this puzzle, so to speak.
So I kind of spoiled myself with the book. I looked something up, and I don't know the extent, but I know the alliance between the Triarchy that is now fighting on Allison's side. You know, it's going to be significant. The next big battle that's going to occur, it's going to be huge. Like the
sea battle.
Naval force that is there, it's going to be massive. But I want to talk about one thing. At first, I loved the scene. I think just because of the setting, I was like, monkey, there's a monkey here. And it's also
I said
like,
the same thing, by the way, yeah. when I started the episode, I go, oh, there's a monkey. Like literally, it's just like,
they got monkeys in Westeros.
Yeah, so yeah. funny. So ridiculous.
And I was like, I like the very Middle Eastern-esque architecture, but that has nothing to do with the story. Anyhow, my biggest complaint with this scene, I like I said, I love the direction where it pivots you into season three with this great, you know, the triarchy on the side. It's going to be massive. But it's so simple, really, of like how he's able to get this massive fleet on his side. Like, I was thinking about it. I'm like, he didn't really beat her up that, right? He got like...
He backhanded her. Like,
yeah. And then she was like... I like you. I'm gonna give you my entire fleet. Like
and
it just
wife. And my yeah, wives. And,
yeah, it just seemed so easy. Like he got like I thought what they were wrestling in the mud. I thought he was gonna like start beating the shit out of her, mm-hmm. right? But that didn't happen. He just get like a smack in, and then she's like, "There you go. Just take everything I have." It's just so simple. It's so convenient.
Yeah,
you know?
Mark, did you have any thoughts on it?
So my thoughts are like more in a broader sense, and I just feel that this season and this kind of episode and the chess moves that are being made, I feel like it just shows that we're never going to get that prime Game of Thrones, like realm-spanning political, like, you know, chess moves anymore to that level. It feels like chess moves are just... or chess pieces are already in the spots they're supposed to be in. We don't see how they get there. Mm-hmm. So we just see, we open and Tywin's already there and he's the brother of the other Lannister that is on the High Council and mm-hmm. he's jumping around and he is making all these deals with different parts of the world, and this extends to other parts of the show where things are just happening between houses. And in Game of Thrones, we used to see all of the inner workings of how we got there. And I feel House of the Dragon this season has shown that when it isn't an intimate story like season one, it is very messy at how it puts its players in their spots. And it feels rushed. It feels like the pacing of season eight of Game of Thrones. And it's really unfortunate because I think a lot of us were holding out hope that they would be able to recapture that magic. But I think this just proves that when they bring the scope out, it gets messy in the Game of Thrones world now. And I think that really sucks.
Yeah. Mm. Liz, did you have anything on it?
I agree with them. I also just feel like, why was this needed in the finale episode? Like, for me, that story and scene is like a great starting off point for season three's first episode of getting people's feet back into the story. Like, when I watch season three, episode ones, I'm not going to remember who this woman is. I'm going to be like, what was the storyline again? What was going on with them? Because I don't really rewatch before I watch a new season. So I just think it was kind of a waste of screen time for them to show that.
Well, I think it also is a scene that's indicative of, like, you could drop that scene at any episode in the whole entire season. Yeah. And it would have the same value and it would have the same...
Like, why open? Why open finale with that?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It already kind of halted momentum.
Yeah.
You know, going into it, like, especially with the way episode seven ends.
We had such like a bold ending of season or episode seven of her like standing there with her dragons. And then to just be like, we're rolling in the mud with the Lannister. It's like, what?
Yeah. What? It was weird. I agree. But there was something in this episode, Liz, that I know you were very excited about because you've been talking about it, where Rhaenyra and Daemon finally meet up.
Oh, thank God.
And Daemon does bend the knee. So I know you go ahead and go off.
No, I actually might have stopped watching this show if that did not happen. And if we just got no great bow for Daemon's storyline and character arc, because that was the most disappointing thing for me throughout this whole season was his storyline. So I'm glad that they are finally together. It pushes their momentum forward as just a team, because I was literally ready to skewer this whole show if he's like, no, like men like me, yeah, I'm gonna be king. I was just like, this ruins everything. And so I started clapping when he like bent the knee. I was like, finally, he's on the same page.
Well, I was gonna say too, one of the biggest things that really works very well in season one is the chemistry between Rhaenyra and Daemon, whether it's Emma Darcy playing mm-hmm. the character or Millie Alcock playing the character. So I agree with your sentiment and the fact that it was kind of a waste that they were not together the whole entire season. And on top of that, people didn't like the Damon hallucinations for that long. You know, like, yeah, we've talked about that. Like, it was something that worked pretty well in the beginning, and then it just kind of got very stale very quick. Vinny, what did you think about them finally meeting back up in this,
yeah,
in this episode?
I loved it. But it's just a shame that this part is the part that we end on, right? Mm-hmm. It feels like, you know, Mark, you said it, like, how this felt like the 8th episode of a 10-episode season. And it feels like there should be 2 more episodes after this. But to end, right, I almost like I love the fact that they're coming together again. Damon is one of my favorite characters. We've said it countless of times throughout, you know, our coverage on the other episodes that, like you said, it gets stale. It got stale very quick, the whole Harrenhal subplot. And it's just like all his agency of a character was just sucked away. And now that he is back into that state of initiative and he now has his agency back, but that's just where we end, right? Yeah. We don't even get like a taste of it. Like, I wish there was 2 more episodes so we could just have we could end on at least eating a little bit of some of that chemistry, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the dessert was put in front of us and we reach and then they slap our hands away.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, you got to wait till 2026.
Yeah.
They even ended him with screaming like war. Yeah. I was like, okay.
It gets,
like,
you hyped up for what?
Give us the war.
Yeah.
And you don't get it.
So, Mark, did you feel similar to things we were saying?
Okay. So I didn't love Damon's wrap up. I like where we end, but I don't like that the Godswood vision essentially changed his character and he didn't make the decision on his own. It's almost he made it out of fear, like, the winter is coming, I was shown the future, he sees Daenerys, he sees the Night King, and after that he's like, oh, you know, Rhaenyra is the one to bring us out of this, instead of really building on something that took way too long in the first place. But I feel like these 8 episodes were him realizing, like, maybe I don't want the responsibility of the crown. Maybe it isn't, you know, my calling to do that. Maybe I like being a rogue or being that wild card. And I thought we were building to that, where he was going to come to that realization, see Rhaenyra and be like, I got this for you. Like, ruling isn't for me. I saw what it did to my brother. It's not for me. Here you go. But instead, it felt like that was taken away from him because this vision essentially told him, like, you're not that guy. It needs to be someone else. So I didn't actually love what happened. I like where it ends. Like, I like that they're together, but I think the journey there, I didn't fully agree with.
I think that's a really fair criticism, especially because so many of those visions that he had were so direct to who Damon is and mm-hmm. what Damon's dealt with. And then the one thing that is not directly influenced by things that he's dealt with previously, that is what gets him to flip on a dime. And I think that's a really, really great point. I like that. That was awesome. I didn't even think about that.
What'd you think, DJ?
No, I felt, I mean, now that I've heard what Mark has to say, I feel similar. Like, I liked it, like Vinny and you had said too, like, the chemistry between Emma Darcy and Matt Smith is so great that anytime they're on screen together, I just love seeing what they're going to be able to cook up in a scene. But, and I love their interaction, but I it's hard because I see it on both sides, right? Like, I don't think this is something Damon should have done in the first place. Like, his character was in a certain place at the end of the first season and then felt like the switch comes pretty quick as soon as this season opens.
Mm.
And then it's all this exposition to these hallucinations that it's not compelling. Like, it was interesting in the beginning, and then it was just like, all right, with this shit already. Like, can we get to the fucking point already? And then, like, you just brought up, Mark, which I wasn't even thinking about. Like, it is something that has nothing to do with him directly that gets him to flip for Rhaenyra, which kind of actually, like, hurts the case for, like, again, there's still going to be this real integral thing within him and his character that he's not going to inherently agree with his wife, you know? Like, it's just very interesting to me.
Do you think the Godswood was too convenient? Because I feel like, if you know, he touches the Godswood, it's like, cool visuals. I actually thought it was really cool. Yeah. And tying it with Game of Thrones was interesting, and the whole kind of very meta way of, like, this is a bigger story. This is bigger than just you. But it brings up that question of, like, why didn't the witch do that earlier? Why didn't he touch the Godswood and have this vision earlier?
Well, you know? It seems like Helaena's been pulling the strings, because we see the 3-eyed raven, and then we cut right to Helena, like, overlooking, and it looks like Aemon has kind of interrupted her while she was doing this. So it seems like she was pulling the strings, and we don't know her motivations on why she would want Daemon to. Maybe she's trying to take down Aemon from the inside, and is like, if Daemon and Rhaenyra are together, that's a stronger, you know, couple to bring down, like, my brothers who are crazy. So we don't know what her plan is. Eventually, I think we've all said that we thought that her clairvoyance was a very interesting and, like, wild card piece of character that is going to be exciting. And I think this is one of those seeds that was planted in a very interesting way that hopefully pays off really well in season three. And, you know, we see what her role in is all in all of this.
Yeah, well, let's jump to Helena. I think that's a good transition point, because on the flip side of all these things happening with Team Black, Aemon is obviously pissed, right? Like, from all the things, now they have three more dragon riders for Team Black. He burns down Sharp's Point and he just looks on, which I know we all have our criticism about that, not being able to show the visual of that and what that looks like, because I feel like that's happened a lot with Aemon's character, unfortunately. And Vhagar is such a cool visual every time we see her that I wish you just got to see more of it. But Aemon wants Helena to join the fleet, essentially, and ride Dreamfire. And there's a big conversation that happens between Aemon, Alicent, and Helena, in which she says that Helena says that Aemon will be the one that ultimately dies and Aegon will be king again. What did you think, Liz, about that interaction? And I mean, it was something that was brought up later with Corlys, even as the Hand, to Rhaenyra, talking about, you know, we can't forget about her. Like, she does have this dragon that's just been sitting there and maturing, and she hasn't ridden her, but, like, it's a big dragon. Like, so they kind of mixed it all in, but, like, it was separated in editing. What did you think about that Team Green interaction, and what do you think, maybe, if you have a prediction going forward?
It was definitely an interesting interaction. I don't know if it fit, though, with Aemon's, like, where they were starting him off in this episode, character-wise. Because if he is so angry that he burns a town just because he wants to prove, like, he has power, he wouldn't just be threatening his sister. He would, like, actually kill her, I feel like. So, I don't know. I felt like they gave us a little bit of, like, the tension and pressure within them, but not to the full Game of Thrones extent. Because I think in Game of Thrones, they wouldn't be so gentle about the whole situation, and he probably would have tried to kill his sister or his mother.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Mark?
Yeah. I think that, like, is a really good point when there's that scene with Alicent, him, and Helena, and she steps in the middle, and I'm like, I think Aemon's going to do something terrible here. Yeah. And it, like you said, it was very tame. It was just like, okay, I'll be back later.
I thought he was gonna. I thought he was gonna at least hit Alicent.
Right. Yeah, like, I thought something
else would have happened other than Helena pulling away and going.
That's what I thought. Because then it also would have been a conversation of, okay, so technically, who has more power? The prince. What do they call him? The prince.
Regent. Yeah.
The actual queen, or like the queen mother. Like, technically, I feel like they're all on the same playing field. So it's not like he has that power against them. So I don't know. I wish it wasn't so just like, I'm mad. Like, come on. He literally just burnt people to death. Like, and he's not going to try to kill his family.
Right. Like Joffrey. We know, like, Joffrey would do something terrible. Come like on. All these other people. Who was the guy at Winterfell? Ramsay.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he would do something crazy. Like, and here it's just like.
It's definitely more tame and finger wagging.
Yeah. Just in their face. I don't know. So, I mean, I didn't enjoy it, but I just kind of. I don't know. They're being
we don't vibe with Team Green anyway.
They're being a little safe.
Is anyone Team Green? I really don't think it was ever like a team thing. Like, I really don't think anyone was like.
Well, they used it in the marketing.
Of course.
You'd be surprised. I've seen people that are like Team Green. Nah.
I think they're those anti-wave people. Yeah, like, everyone's on Team Black, so I'm gonna be Team Green.
Yeah.
Vinny, what do you think of it?
Yeah. I just echo the same words that you guys said. I really have nothing else to say. It was an interesting interaction. I think one thing is that I found interesting about that scene was it almost seemed to parallel that scene from season one where Alicent and Rhaenyra were like, I forget how it went, but they were like together. It was like they were face to face.
Did Viserys split it up?
Is that when they like she cuts her arm?
Yeah, right, that's okay. It.
That is that the dinner?
Like, the kids.
Yeah,
they were fighting like the kids.
Oh,
the
yes,
eye
yeah,
got,
yeah,
yeah,
yes.
The eye got cut.
Yes.
Yeah. So it almost seemed very parallel to that. within the just kind of the visuals and the type of interaction that went on. But I don't really have many other words.
I think it was a lot more heightened, though, too. Like, I think there was a lot more stakes to what you're referring to.
Yeah.
And it felt like it. When at this time, it's like, we're having a whole entire, like, top of the food chain of this team all, like, butting heads at this point. And it's like, they're really in chaos right now. Like, they don't have anything going for them. Yeah. Otto, we see at the end of the episode, which we can get to later, but is trapped. He's captured. Allison is going off to talk to Rhaenyra at the end of this episode. Aemon is burning down fucking villages left and right. And Helaena's, like, rightfully so, is still in trauma mode. She says to her mother, I don't like being queen. I was much happier before I was queen. Mm-hmm. She lost a child because of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Liz, you can, incest. She had to marry her brother.
She had to marry her brother.
Like, crazy. Messed so, like, up. Team Green's obviously not firing on all cylinders right now.
And they're also all coming at each other. Like, I truly thought Aemon was going to attack Helaena when she said, like, and you burned Aegon. When she said that she knew that and he's like, that's treason. I thought he was going to push her down the stairs. I thought something was going to happen. And no, instead she's just like, well, you're going to die.
and I did like when he was like, I could kill you. And she's like, it wouldn't matter.
Oh, it was like, that was.
I'm
good.
Like, that's fire.
So I guess we can move on to Allison eventually going and pleading to Rhaenyra, because this is another Team Green sort of transitional thing. Their scenes have not been working for me this season.
Really?
Yeah, like the two of them together. Like, aww. I mean, we talked about it. I liked the way that it was for. What was it, episode 3 when they meet up in the town?
When she
in the
gets
town.
Into the...
Yeah, it was convenient, which we talked about. It was incredibly convenient, but the content within the conversation I thought was really great and valuable. This didn't work as well for me. I don't know if it was because of all the things leading up to it and her just, again, doing like the same... Like, I'm getting sick of Allison, like, very quickly. And maybe that's the point of the character, but I don't know if that's really the point. You seem to disagree a little bit.
I think she's supposed to be, like, annoying. I do. I think she's supposed to be that character who's just, like, the horrible person that keeps making all these mistakes and, like, selfish acts. But in her mind, she's like, no, I'm perfect. Like, I'm doing everything right and you're all wrong. And just sees herself on, like, a higher level. And those are, like, the best characters to hate. So, like, I hate her character, but, like, in a way that I'm like, yeah, Allison, I hate you. Like, you're terrible.
Yeah, it's gone from, like, empathy for her to now, like, it's, like, pathetic.
Yeah.
Like, she's just walking around, like, I didn't really do anything wrong, but, like, I deserve a quiet life now. I want to be out of, I want to be out of the game. It's like, well, you screwed everyone over. Yeah. You can't just dip out now.
Yeah. And she wants her son to get off, like, no harm.
Scot-free.
She's like, oh, well, he'll bend the knee. He'll bend the knee. And Rhaenyra is like, are you crazy?
And then she gives him up in the end. She's like, yeah, you can kill my son just so I can live a life. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, that's what I mean. Like, it didn't feel like it had that same emotional weight that it should have. Especially leading up, like coming off of like so much of the buildup is the end of season one, A Son for a Son. The premiere episode of this show or this season is A Son for a Son. And that like moment should have hit a lot harder. And I was like, like it was fun.
Well, it's because I feel like so much has already happened that it's not just A Son for a Son anymore.
Oh yeah.
Now it's like full, it's just war.
Vinny, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I'm trying to format my kind of thoughts here. For Allison's character, I just feel like she's been stripped of all her nuance and like her agency. And I get that's kind of the point of like Aemon's like, oh, you're a former queen. You don't deserve to be on this council. You don't deserve to kind of have any sort of agency anymore. But even the writers of the show are like I genuinely like whatever direction Allison goes in from here, I kind of don't care. Like they've kind of made it to the point where like I don't care about Allison anymore. You know, like she was just stripped of all this of her what season one she was so. Not complicated, but
conflicted,
and there was some richness there to her character. And now, Mark, you said pathetic, and that's like the best way to describe it. I just feel like her whole arc is just kind of pathetic at this point.
No, I agree.
You know? Is there any part of you, any of you guys, that think that she's trying to pull one over though on Team Black and try to manipulate them into still holding power?
No, I think because she's so easily controlled. I think that's another aspect of her character that is something where she is so not eager, but she's so just lets herself give herself up so much of the time. Like, think about when Otto is the one that presents her with the opportunity as a child, essentially, to marry Viserys. And she's just like, all right, well, this is what my dad wants.
Well, she does say that, though, in this episode where she's like, I just did what my duty was and, like, never questioned it, never pushed back because I thought that this was going to, like, take care of me. And she's starting to realize that, like, no, you're not just taken care of because you follow the rules. Like, the rules change every day.
Yeah. And that's why I think I can't see her flipping. Like, I think that her character is her character. Mm-hmm. I think that so much of that is like, you know, I just wanted to make everybody happy. And I wanted, like, she's a people pleaser. Mm-hmm. Like, definitely. But at the same time, she has her convictions and she has her way about doing things. Like, whether it's sleeping with Rhaenyra's father or Rhaenyra's bang buddy, Kristen, literally. Like that's just what happens. So I can't see that personally, but
it's also just like implausible to me that she, who's the enemy, walks into the castle and Rhaenyra she lets her go. Like, I feel like every other guard would have been like, we need to arrest her and put her in jail.
Well, like, the fact that she's like, yeah, I told my guards to put down their swords at the front door. I'm like, okay, like, is that how it works? Like, if Aemon rolled up and just put down his sword, they're like, oh, we'll bring it right here.
Come on, sir. Come on in. We got Chick-fil-A in the bag for you. Come on, bud.
I'm like, what? What do you mean?
And parallel, going back to the beginning of the season, Missaria shows up, and they throw Missaria into a cell.
Yeah. Come on. So, yeah. But they don't put Allison?
There's a lot of holes. There's a lot of interesting plot holes in this season.
You're telling me that the queens, like, people aren't going to be like, damn, she messed up, not like arresting her and putting her in prison right now.
Yeah, I am. And this is unfair of me to say, but I do think, I'm pretty sure you might know this, Vinny. Wasn't season one, so Ryan Condal is the showrunner and the co-creator of the show, but wasn't he not the showrunner for season one? Like, he was the co-creator and he directed certain episodes, but he didn't showrun. I could look it up.
I think I saw a YouTube video where they said a key producer from the first season or executive producer from the first season that was part of Game of Thrones since like season one wasn't on this season.
That I remember too. Like, and I remember they lost a creative force behind what helped season one become what it was. And season one, in the beginning, people were like, I enjoy it, it's not Thrones. But towards the end, the momentum picks up heavy at the end of season one. Mm-hmm. And this season, you don't really get that. Like, you don't get that moment. I mean, I echo what you said, Mark. I think the mid-season episode 4 was a really, really well done episode. But a lot of it is just set up for stuff that we don't even get answers to leading into it. So,
I also feel like they keep growing the cast. Right now, there's a lot of characters and they're just not killing anybody. When, like, you live in a time of dragons, like, people should just randomly be like getting killed, I feel like.
Yeah,
like, you're really telling me that we have three new dragon riders and they all just casually now know how to ride dragons perfectly and are like great at it.
Kind of going back to what you said, Darian, I looked it up. So Ryan Condal was involved in season one, but who we're missing here is Miguel
Sapochnik.
He's not here in season two, and he directed some of the greatest episodes of Game of Thrones, and he was majorly involved as showrunner in season one, but he's not here
there anymore. You go. That's a major change. I mean, for the people who don't understand, the showrunner is the director of the show, and TV works very differently than film, and it's a whole overall vision. There's especially something that deals with an IP as big as Game of Thrones, like, you need to be attached to the material. And as Vinny just said, like, Sapochnik has been attached since Thrones was on the air and directed some of the biggest episodes of Thrones. So they might not have the director in the season that could do the action necessarily. You know what I mean? And even Geeta Vasant Patel does this episode. And I believe that
she did episode 3 as well.
Okay. And she had done a previous episode from season 1. I don't know which one off the top of my head, but like, that's not a director that comes off the top of my head when I remember Thrones episodes. Like, I remember there were certain directors that did Thrones and certain directors that did House of the Dragon, where it's like, I remember their episodes. Alan Taylor is like another perfect example. Yeah, he did two episodes this season. I think he might have done episode four.
He did do episode four.
Exactly. Yeah. So again, these are people that have been attached to the lore now for basically, I mean, over a decade, right? When did Thrones start?
2013?
Okay, so over a decade ago, these people have been attached. Yeah. So that's a big thing, man. I mean, it's something we haven't talked about. I wish we probably brought it up on past episodes, but that's going to play into the way that the direction is going of this series overall. Three last things quickly. We could just discuss whatever you guys, I'll throw it to all of you. You can talk about whatever. Kristen and Gwaine, obviously. Gwaine finds out that he's banging his sister, and that becomes a whole thing. Aegon and Larys decide to leave after. And Aegon gets some interesting moments in this episode. We see him kind of trying to train himself to walk again and do all these things. He's going through excruciating pain, and Larys is there for him. And I really like, I mean, Larys as a character is probably my favorite in the show.
Really?
I think I just think he's great. Like I always love Littlefinger. So I love their interactions. And then we also have Alan talking to Corlys and finally kind of bearing his soul on like how he feels about the whole situation of being his son. So Mark, do you want to start off one of the things you want to talk about?
One of those things?
Yes.
Yeah, I thought the Gwaine thing was rushed. I feel like the scene starts and he already has a sword out, and we as an audience just have to be like, oh, okay, he knows, apparently. And then the scene kind of ends with a lull. It's just like he sits down and everything's okay, but he just pulled out a sword towards the hand of the king, and all of the soldiers are just standing there watching, and then he puts it away, and they're like, yeah, okay, everything's good over there. I don't dislike Kristen Cole's dialogue here. I think he does bring up some like really interesting points that ground him as a character of like, my life doesn't matter anymore, I've messed up, but like, even if I wanted to redeem myself, I'm now a foot soldier in a war full of dragons. Like, there's no even point for me to redeem myself. I think his ideas about honor with all the other white cloaks and how like men have their urges, and like honor is, what do you say, honor is like mist that disappears in the morning. Like, it's there when you want to show it, but then it goes away quickly when like men have their vices. I thought all of that was like good Thrones dialogue, but again, just the clunkiness of everything around it just felt like, okay, that felt weird as a scene.
Vinny, did you want to go off that, or did you want to talk about one of the other things?
No, I'll let you guys keep talking, because okay. I have a thing that I want to bring up, but it's not what you any
one of the things I brought up. Yeah. Okay, I'll talk about Aegon and Larys leaving, because I do think that, I mean, we've known,
you love Larys.
I love Larys. Larys has, as we've said, this very manipulative nature about himself and always trying to weasel his way into whoever is running things. And he obviously reaches a moot point when Aemon calls him a toad back in episode 6, I think it is, or maybe episode 5. And it's very obvious that he's like, well, I can't get in with this guy. This guy clearly is a sociopath and I'm a toad in his eyes, so this isn't going to work. But he does have this, part of it is that he's able to get through Aegon because of what he's dealt with now and what he's dealing with currently. And they have this sort of this similarity between them both being, I guess, disabled or handicapped. I forget exactly how they describe it in the show. But there's that part of it. But also Aegon is very easily manipulated. Easily manipulated. Yes. Easily manipulated because he's a dumbass. So like, there's a lot of that to it as well. And I love that we get to see that these two are off together leading into season 3. Did you have anything on that, or do you want to talk about?
No, I'll talk about it really quickly. Actually, Aegon is one of my favorite characters, I think.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
I want to see a change in his character next season where he learns the power that he has, that he doesn't have to be the strongest person in the room. He just needs to be probably the smartest, and he can do that by just like listening and watching people.
And now he has to.
That's so I think fair. It's going to be a super humbling experience, especially now having to be just like a hidden person. Like, here he was king, and now he has to kind of live, as he says, amongst the, like, what did he say? Like, goat fuckers. So like, I find him to be so funny, and I just really am excited to see what happens to his character. 'Cause I don't think he's like a bad character. I think that he just has bad luck, man.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Benny, do you want to get into what you were talking about?
Yeah, I want to piggyback off of that. Well, I'll bring up what I was going to talk about. But piggybacking off of that, I actually was kind of rooting for Aegon to die after, you know, he falls from Sunfire, he's getting burnt from Vhagar. I was like, oh, he's dead. He's not surviving that. If he survives it, then it's going to be kind of stupid. But I kind of take back those words because, like you said, Liz, like, this is really humbling for him. And I'm actually, it's one of the, I feel like Aegon's moments in this episode were some of my favorite because I was going into this of like, he's never going to redeem himself. But now we're seeing a perspective very, and also it's interesting that Laerys is the person that's bringing out this perspective in him that I'm kind of excited to see where Aegon is going to be in by the time, let's say, season 4 comes around, you know?
Is this us becoming Team Green, Loki?
I would say
Team Aegon. Team Aegon.
Strictly Team Aegon.
Whatever color he picks, I'm in.
Yeah. The other thing I was going to bring up, though, Rhaena. Rhaena, I know we were talking about it off camera a little bit. Yeah, this whole episode, Rhaena's subplot is so, it's stupid. I was very optimistic about it. I was very optimistic about it in the prior episodes. I'm like, I don't know, maybe we'll, but I'm like, I'm already over it. We've only seen like this much, but I'm still already over it because one, it made me think about, 2 episodes ago when she first like ran off, right? She first ran off. And one, it made me think, why wasn't she in the carriage to begin with? Like, all her brothers, all the baby dragons and all the brothers are in the carriage. But for some reason, she's also a kid. Like, she's young. It's not like why would they just have her, like, walking behind the a carriage, let's say, is going, like, 20 miles per hour. Would, do they expect her to just
break
be, like Roadrunner from Looney Tunes, like, next to her? Like, I don't know. Like, why was she out of the carriage? Why was she even given, like, an opportunity to run away like that? It's very... It just seems stupid. And then throughout this episode, it feels like a video game side quest where you're, like, collecting, like, materials, and it's like a super tedious thing because she's just running around and she's sleeping and she's running around and then somehow finds the wild dragon. It feels like an RPG game where you just have to go through this like tedious task. And then like the whole idea of the wild dragon, it's like I feel like her story could be a tragic one, but they're not allowing it to be because we already know she's going to tame this wild dragon somehow and she's going to be a part of the fam, right? But we don't need that really. Like, we can leave her story as a tragic one, and I think that could be such powerful storytelling and thematic messaging, right? Where you could do Rhaena in a way where it's so nuanced and like how she's constantly cast it aside. Like, we don't need to include her as a dragon rider. Mm-hmm. She could be a tragic tale. Like, I don't understand why we're not allowing kind of these darker sides of the world, kind of these more not to the highest morality that were shown in Thrones, but we can't see it here in House of the Dragon.
Well, it's just like a ridiculous proposition because Rhaenyra said, hey, protect my kids, protect my dragon, and she just runs off to chase down this wild dragon that is apparently, we don't even know the significance. Like, I guess deep down she's like, I need to prove my worth and have a dragon like everyone else. But it's so stupid because, first of all, I forgot she ran away last week because I saw her just go off the path, and then this week she's like, she has no water and she's like dirty, and I'm like, what happened? And then she finds this mangy ass dragon that I wouldn't touch with a 10-foot pole.
Mangy ass dragon.
Did you see it?
Yeah, no,
like,
yeah.
I'm like, I'm not touching that. I'm not getting on that thing. So, and like, this is gonna like turn the tide. Like, I don't know. I thought this was so poorly done. Yeah. As you said, and yeah, I don't know. I think like you said, they tried to do something like, oh, she needs a dragon to be important, but they could have had this really interesting story about her becoming a mother figure to these kids that literally cannot see their mother.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we have just the adventures of Rhaena on the hillside.
Yeah. My last question for you guys, which I think it's actually a good bouncing off point of that, because my personal opinion is that the question is, who is the MVP of the season based on if you had to pick a character? The biggest thing for me is that I feel like there's so many things happening that there's not anybody that completely takes the reins of that necessarily. You might, so Vinny already has one. Go ahead.
It's Rhaenys and Corlys.
I was gonna say Rhaenys for me. Corlys to a Corliss does some cool things, but he doesn't get really the same opportunity to shine, I think, as Rhaenys does. But that was going to be my pick, actually, Rhaenys, so I agree. But do you want to expand on it?
It's a shame, you know, obviously her death is incredible. And it's really just episode 4 brings it together. And then before that, we just had so much, like, that scene underneath the bridge. And I believe episode 3, where Corliss and Rhaenys are talking. You know, where we had in season 1, we had that strong chemistry between Daemon and Rhaenyra, but in this season, a lot of chemistry is just completely missing because characters are either not in the same room together, or, you know, it's also a season of tension. But with Rhaenys, we get that chemistry and we get that almost comfort, and she's also the one to take the helm when Rhaenyra is grieving. And like, way off earlier in the season, Rhaenyra's grieving, she's kind of away. Rhaenys hops on the council, is like, I'm gonna take the helm of the ship and drive this ship. And then she also dies a heroic dragon rider's death. So I think she was the MVP.
Yeah. I echo what you say. Liz, do you have one?
I echo it too. There was a moment where I thought Jace's character was starting, they were starting to develop him in the beginning to be like MVP of really having his mother's back, but he just pouts so much for me. And like, I'm like, dude, if you want to be respected, like, stand next to your mother. He started doing it in this last episode, but I think it was after I forget her name. Who's the girl?
Bela.
Yeah, Bela called him out and was like, no, you're pouting. She was like, pull it together. So I was hoping he would, but no, I agree with you guys. Honestly, I feel like there wasn't anybody that I was like, yeah.
Overly impressed.
Speaking of Jace, Darian, how are you feeling about the new Dragon Riders on Dragonstone? We got Ulf, Hugh, and Adam, right?
Yeah.
How are we feeling with the tension between the Targaryens and the new Dragon
Riders? No, so I love that scene because it also just shows how ridiculous Ulf is as a character. And it's funny. I mean, I wasn't on the episode, obviously, last week. I know you guys talked about it, but there was so much speculation throughout the whole season on Hugh and Ulf especially, because and there was too with Adam as well, but just not to the same extent. I feel like they jumped back to Ulf and Hugh a lot more in this season. But it is so funny to see Ulf in an environment that he's so not accustomed to, but at the same time, he's like, we're one. We are this, the same. We are the same ilk. And it's funny because he comes from believing that himself when he's in all the bar scenes, and then he finally gets to the moment and he's like shitting his pants essentially, and then this inevitability comes to fruition and he starts hugging Jace, and it's like, it's so funny to me. I'm gonna be very curious to see where they go with that in the next season and to see how that responsibility kind of holds. I have a weird feeling they're gonna go comedic with it. I feel like he's just gonna die quick. I don't know why. Ulf's character. Okay. Hugh, and I think Hugh as a character has really, like, it's really cool to see, especially with his backstory that we get, which is, it's good backstory. I feel like a lot of that getting of the town folk, and then you see all the stuff with his daughter and his wife, I thought it really worked really well. Mark, did you have thoughts on it as well?
Yeah, so I think I liked all the interactions. What I didn't like, which I think one of you guys brought up about the Dragon Riders kind of being able to ride their dragons competently within 2 days.
Yeah.
Rhaenyra is like, we're going to war. Suit up in 2 days.
Learn your commands. Okay.
I'm like, is it that easy? You want to send dragon riders out there? Like, I get you have a dragon, you automatically have an advantage, but to send out your biggest assets on untrained people seems stupid. Yeah. And then she makes the suggestion, like, we have to target these two towns where there's going to be a lot of like civilian casualties. I don't know, why don't they just go after Criston Cole and this whole army that they know is going to Harrenhal? You have 4-5 dragons. Why go to the towns when you can just take out the spearhead of Team Green's force?
Like, is it because they maybe have this army now building in Harrenhal for Team Black and they think that's enough? I mean, so I agree with what you're saying.
I feel like dragons could just torch really
quickly.
Split
the dragons up. Yeah, like, who would have thought? They have 4 of them now.
They have
four quadrants.
You have the numbers.
They have 6, actually.
You have Daemon Dragon back in play. Oh,
7, actually.
7.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not like Vhagar's going to make it from King's Landing by the time they get there. We
know
they're right
girl.
Across the wall.
She's an old girl. So, she's got arthritis or something.
she just burned Sharpstown.
Yeah.
She's
Sharp
tired.
Point. Yeah, yeah.
Sharp point. Sharp whatever.
She's tired.
Yeah. So, like, I just don't understand why they were doing that. I feel like they might have just input that to be kind of like, ooh, look at this moral gray area. Rhaenyra is ready to kill innocents. Ooh, and it's like, well, tactically, you should probably just go after the spearhead of the operation. And, you know, you have four dragons there. You can still have three others, like, waiting for Vhagar to at least block it. And then, yeah, just get in the way. Just, like, box out. Just box out. Just box out Vhagar. So, yeah, that kind of... I didn't really like that part.
No, I think that's fair. We've talked for a while. I mean, we knew this was going to be a long pod. It's us discussing basically the whole finale of season two and kind of recapping a lot of our thoughts from season two overall. But it's time now for scores because we wait till the end of the season, obviously, to give our full score on if it's a television show. If you guys haven't joined us, that's usually the way we do it. But
there's
you have one more thing.
last because we're at the very end, and it also happens at the very end of the episode. We see Allison's fourth child.
Oh, thank you for bringing
her
this up.
Third son. Okay. Who we still have never seen a face. Daeron Targaryen is his name. He rides a dragon by the nickname of the Blue Queen. I don't know the real name of the dragon. But we see him riding in the sky. But we still have yet to even see an actor play him. So I don't know if you guys want to talk about that.
And we didn't even know it until the after episode thing. Like, that dragon flew by and no one knew it was him. And I don't even think they ever explained that he had a dragon.
I think it's more done as like an Easter egg. And the other which is stupid. But the other part of it, which we talked about, is there's so many plot holes that it reveals more of the fact that it just feels like this, going back to what I said before about the show running too, it just feels like they're not all connected this season. Like, the creative team is not, or maybe they're on the same page and they were like, all right, guys, scale it back. And it's like, why would you do that? Like, season one was so successful, especially towards the tail end.
It kind of goes back to what I said at the beginning. Like, they have all these chess pieces, but they don't know how to set them up anymore like they did in Thrones. They're just like, oh, yeah, we have another dragon and Allison's kid over there. We'll put them in there. And it just doesn't make much sense.
No, I agree. All right. Everybody ready with their scores? All right. I'll start first. I was really excited going into this season, really excited to get back into that Throne sort of universe. And I love the quality that HBO is accustomed to putting out, especially when... I was covering four shows at once all at the same time in the channel between this, The Boys, The Bear, and The Acolyte, which I got to do episodes of all of those with all you guys. The Boys finished very strong. Vinny, we talked about that. And even though it had some lackluster episodes, The Bear, I was on the opposite side. I'm in the minority, but I still really enjoyed the season. The Acolyte, Mark, so many things stunk. We can say that was not, it was just not a great show. This show, I thought there was good momentum in the beginning. I thought there was great momentum in the middle, and then it petered out because they decided to do nothing in the finale. And unfortunately, one of the episodes I talked about that I really enjoyed was episode 6, because I thought it was a really great setup episode for something we were eventually going to see at the end of this, and we didn't get what we wanted. And a lot of people were disappointed online. Like, we opened up the episode, a lot of people, it has a 6.5 on IMDb as of right now, and that is perfectly in line with my score for season two. I am giving it a 6.5, which is a massive drop off for where I probably would have given season one if we were covering on the channel. So 6.5 is my score for House of the Dragon season two overall. Liz, you want to go next?
I'll go next. I agree with you on a lot of things. I probably came in with lower expectations because although I thought season one was good, I was still like, ugh, a lot of setup. So I was like, all right, they got to give us the action this season. And around episode 3, I was like, yikes. I was like, this is very slow. Episode 4, when they finally brought out the dragons, was obviously a big one. And I thought we were just going to keep that momentum. But then episode 5 for me, I don't even remember what happened on it. So, like, very low. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't really love this season. I hope they bring us more, but I don't know if they have a team of writers that are able to do it. So I'm giving it a 6.
Okay, Mark?
I'm not good at giving scores usually. Yeah, I would agree. I think the first 4 episodes I really liked. It felt like Thrones. I enjoyed the cap off to those first 4. Like, that mid-season was really good. And then, as you guys said, it peters off by the end. The momentum slows down. And it felt less and less like Thrones by every episode that it went on. It's hard to give a score because, like, it did give me something to talk about every week. And there were still those, like, good moments. And it's like, I see the potential. But I'm gonna cop out and go with 6.25.
Oh,
now Vinny
wow.
is the last
Vinny.
The last one here.
Yeah. okay. So season one I adore. I think season one's like honestly a solid 9 for me. I love season one. And just comparing that and the shoes that season two had to fill, which it didn't fill successfully, but I still think there were some really incredible moments. I'm going to give this one a 6.5.
Okay. So, we got, so sorry, I'll cut that out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, shit, score. Okay. Give myself a second. Well, I think that was a really good review. We guys talked about a lot of stuff in the finale. We talked about season two as a whole, essentially, and we're all in the sixes range. So we're on par with the finale and the season probably as a whole. I mean, I don't know what the overall score for the season would be on IMDb. They don't have that, but I feel like it would probably be in
They
line.
Actually give an average.
Oh,
so,
they do? Okay.
Yeah. Episodes average is 7.8.
Okay. I think that's gonna go down as time goes on, because I think people were excited for certain setups. And
but season one's average was
an 8.7.
Oh, you already looked it up?
No, I didn't.
Oh, you're just guessing. It was an average of, I'm sorry, my computer, 8.7.
Whoa!
That's crazy.
Love that for myself. But anyway, so we hope you guys enjoyed our coverage all season long of House of the Dragon. Please let us know in the comments what you guys think. Obviously, is a finale that was kind of torn apart online, and I think we can all understand why, but let us know in the comments your thoughts on the whole season overall, your thoughts on the show overall, the announcement that the show is going to go 4 seasons, and we might have to wait again close to 2 years until we get the follow-up to what this is, and we'll probably cover it, but at that point, it's like, what's going to happen? You know what I mean? Like, so far from now. But let us know in the comments what you guys think. Please be sure to subscribe to us. We have the Culture Wave Media Network. We cover all things film and television. We got a bunch of other stuff coming for you guys, including the review for Trap, M. Night Shyamalan's new movie coming up soon. And also, if you guys were doing this thing on an internet streaming platform called Radio Garden State, we do one movie review on there as well. If you guys want to go online and check that out, we have our Twisters review coming this week for that. But also, you guys can support us on social media everywhere. All that stuff is down in the description below and right underneath in the video. We're on everything. Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, everywhere. So please be sure to give us a follow on those platforms if you don't already. Just signing off, I am Darian Scalamoni.
I am Liz Seiko.
I'm Mark Iacobino.
I'm Vinny Albano.
And we'll see you guys next time.
This is The Culture.